everyone. You know, it's been a very interesting week. We're here on the East Coast, so we got completely slammed with snow. I actually lost electricity and power for 2 days, so we had to go stay at an apartment that was vacant that we own, and it was interesting because that's probably the only paranormal experience I had in the past week. We're sitting in the room watching a movie, and my one daughter, who's afraid of ghosts, was saying she was afraid it was haunted, and I was telling her it wasn't, even though I know it is. And then the light in the hallway just turned off, and I was telling her, oh, it's nothing, and then, you know, I go out and check, and I say, oh, it was just a switch or something, and then next thing I know, the light went back on by itself, so I just ignored it and let it go for the rest of the night. So it's been a slow week, you know, mostly because what can you do when you're buried under, you know, 4 feet of snow pretty much, except kind of go within and think about what your next step should be, or, you know, maybe if this is a message for us that, you know, we're out and about and out in other things too much, and, you know, maybe it is time for all of us to spend time with ourselves and our families and things like that. Which is interesting considering the guest that we have tonight. We have Rusty Stewart, who is actually a doctor in psychoeducational processes, which he got that degree at Temple University, great place. We actually did an investigation there at a frat house. And he's a psychotherapist and a very skilled energy healer, and he's a Reiki master, which I am completely in awe of. He does hypnotherapy, and he does something called advanced master shapeshifting, which I want to hear about. So what he does is he has a private practice, and he does energy balancing, healing, psychotherapy. I know he does some work with shamanic journeys and soul retrieval and dance and kind of like hug and touch therapy, and how that works with people. And I can't wait to hear more about that and have him tell you all about it. He does a lot of uninhibited fun, radical play and dance, things like that. It's very interesting how these kind of exercises and healing and learning more about yourself and about other people and working with them can help you open up more yourself. Even people like us that are paranormal investigators and we're trying to interact with the spirit world. And a lot of times we're so focused on the material, maybe with equipment or with people or the building or something that's physical, that we forget about maybe looking more into a vibrational level or into a soul level or another level. And I think that Rusty might have some insight into that and how we can better attune ourselves with the spirit world and maybe get some of the answers we're looking for. So welcome to the show, Rusty.
Thank you, Lori.
No problem. Did you dig out?
Yeah. You know, it's snowing right now.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's a wet snow, but it's slicking the roads up a bit here. I think we're supposed to get a couple inches tonight, but we've gotten at least 3 feet over the last week.
Oh, yeah. It was snowing earlier. I think it stopped right now, but I wasn't happy when I looked out earlier and saw more snow. Hopefully spring will come on Wednesday, and it'll all melt, right?
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, you've done so much. It's hard for me to know where to start. And, I mean, did you, that you were going to be a healer and a therapist?
I don't know that I always knew that. I think, for me, a real marker in my life was when I was in fourth grade and I was sitting in homeroom. And all of a sudden, I was up in the corner of the ceiling looking back at the rest of the room and myself.
Wow.
And when I had that experience, I knew that what I was being taught in different educational institutions, my family, church, government, just wasn't really true, and that there was a lot of other stuff underneath of it where the truth came from. And that's what led me on my journey, and of course, it led me to drugs and alcohol for a number of years.
Oh, no.
Because that's most people that get involved with drugs and alcohol are searching for spirit. You know, alcohol.
Exactly.
So that was my first step in starting to journey into the unknown ethers, and then eventually at 31, you know, I became clean and sober, and at 35 went back to school and got my PhD, and that's when I really started my path as far as, you know, going inward as opposed to focusing on outward.
Oh, wow. So do you think that, you know, I theorize myself and that I also had my own stint with alcohol, that it helps to prepare you for helping other people, because having been there, you really do understand where they are.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think that's critical in almost anything in life. I don't care whether it's psychotherapy, you know, drug and alcohol counselor, or whether you're counseling people on losing weight. I mean, unless you've had the experience yourself, there's something to me that's significantly missing, because empathy is probably the biggest part of working with people and being able to, like, walk in their moccasins, so to say. And, you know, and that presents a sense of self-efficacy to my clients, because they're like, oh, you've been there and you're here now, so it's possible.
But right.
If somebody's never been there, you know, it's just talk a lot of times, and people don't trust that. And the most important thing in any healing, and I don't care whether it's shape-shifting or whatever, is the relationship you have with the person, whether it's a teacher, a guru, a shaman, whatever. It's the relationship you have with that person that creates trust, and then you co-create together, basically.
Oh, definitely. So do you feel that the clients that come to you and or that choose you, however you want to phrase that, are sent to you for a reason, and the interaction helps both of you learn?
Well, it definitely helps both of us learn, because what I find happens is I'm attracting clients that are dealing with the stuff that I'm currently dealing with. And you know, a lot of teachers have told me over the years that's the best time to teach it, when you're going through it, because you're in it. And, you know, it provides freshness. You know where, you know what's working. The important thing is to be doing your work and to still be focused on the client. But, you know, it's always interesting how, like, when something's up for me, all of a sudden that's who starts showing up in my office.
It's very it's interesting, because I was talking to Bill, my producer, and he also works with me in my paranormal group. And we deal a lot with ghosts and helping people that are experiencing issues with the paranormal. And it's always very complex. It's never just as simple as, you know, they have a ghost in their house. There's always a lot more going on underneath. Like, there's a reason why this is happening for that person. And just recently, we even said it, every place we were at, it was the ghost of a suicide. And there was some interaction with the person who had also had issues themselves. And we're questioning, like, why is this series of events? I said, well, it's something that's important that we need to learn. So we need to really pay attention to the relationships that we're being shown, and how they're resolving, and what's happening, and what's going on in them, because we're going to have to use this for something that's coming up. Because it always happens that way.
And sometimes we don't know it in the moment, but, you know, it will show up eventually. Sometimes we have to look back on it, and it's like, oh, yeah, now I see why that happened, or why that came into my life. And other times it's a matter of going within ourselves and spending some still time in meditation or breath work, and, you know, really asking the questions out to the ethers. And then, you know, if we listen closely enough and are patient, we'll get the answers.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and I was saying this earlier about the snowstorm, everybody complained about it, but I really tried to take it as an opportunity to, you know, this is maybe it's the universe is kind of showing us that we need to spend time by ourselves. Even like we lost our electricity in the dark, no distraction, with just really focusing on that and what's going on inside us and why we need these things, or we feel we need these things to survive, because obviously we survive without them when we have to, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you drop your, and this is a kind of a funny one, but you kind of drop your cell phone in the toilet, you went out your cell phone for a couple of days. and then you feel like, oh my God, my life's coming to an end. And it's like, well, we didn't have cell phones. Well, most of us didn't have cell phones like 10 years ago. So, you know, it's like we got along fine then, but, you know, we start becoming comfortable. We start becoming, you know, used to certain things in our lives. And those things many times end up being distractions that keep us from being able to see what's going on within ourselves.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I was really intrigued with your the shape-shifting things that you were talking about. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I've learned my shape-shifting from a couple teachers. John Perkins, originally I did a couple certifications with him, one up at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, and another one down in Florida, West Palm Beach. And he does a lot of work traveling around the country, and he's kind of, and then my other teacher, Clem, who's also known as John Perkins, and he's a Shwa shaman from deep in the Amazon jungle down in South America. In Ecuador, and he comes up here occasionally and does teachings and healings. And so shape-shifting, there's basically four different levels of shape-shifting. And, you know, in the Western world, you know, we operate in a very Newtonian, science-based world in the Western world. And what most people ask a lot about is like, oh, can you shape-shift into another object or into a jaguar or an anaconda? And the reality of it is, and I'll get to that in a minute, but that's the least important aspect of shape-shifting. And, you know, so the most important aspect of shape-shifting is the fact of shape-shifting our belief systems, or shape-shifting our perspective on how we view something in our lives, because that's what changes our world. It's like, you know, it's like if you're ever wondering, you know, what your beliefs are, take a look around you, what's happening in your life. That's what you believe.
Uh-huh.
And if you change your beliefs, you'll change the world around you. So we work on shape-shifting belief systems, because that's the precursor of then shifting form. And then the second level of shape-shifting is done more on an organizational level. And John Perkins does a lot within corporations. And so you change the languaging a little bit, but, you know, there's the macro, the micro, and everything follows systems. You know, a lot of my PhD work was in systems theory and groups and stuff like that. And so what you want to do is you want to shape-shift the culture within the corporation of the organization. One way you shape-shift is like, well, we can make a lot of money and have a really good profit being sustainable and being, you know, into green living and being careful about what we're doing with the environment and, you know, social justice and social responsibility and treating our employees well and wanting them to work here and contribute. So that's shape-shifting on another level, and it's really helpful when you can do it from the top down in an organization, because then you got the leadership that buys into it, and that makes the shape-shifting happen that much more rapid. It can happen from the bottom up, too. You just got to get everybody to buy into the shape-shift, and you'll see an organization shape-shift, you know, by using, you know, certain techniques. You just change the languaging so that it's friendly to them, and they don't think you're, like, all woo-woo and flipped out.
I like that term.
And so then you have shape shifting on the third level, which is cellular shape shifting. Uh-huh. And, you know, basically that's where you're shape shifting illness or dis-ease into wellness or wholeness. And, you know, there's a really good, I think it's called The Science of Miracles. It's a DVD put out by Greg Braden. And you actually get to witness this hospital in China. That's basically, this woman has bladder cancer, and it's a more severe form of bladder cancer, because bladder cancer in and of itself is fairly easy cancer to get rid of. But she her life was threatened. So, you know, she went through a number of learnings and then went to the hospital. And the doctors stand around the patient and they visualize and they are in the experience that they are healthy and whole. And by them doing that with themselves, that carries over into the patient. So you've got the ultrasound showing a still picture of the tumor in the bladder. And then you got a live ultrasound showing what's happening as they're going through this procedure. This procedure involves no medicine, no knives, no cutting, no nothing except for just them standing around her. And you watch the tumor shrink to nothing.
Wow. I've got to look at that. That's amazing. Now, Ron has a question from the chat room. Sure. He wants to know if you can shift your location or in time also.
Well, that gets into a little different type of shape-shifting, which probably wouldn't even be called shape-shifting, but would be more like bi-location, bi-locality, which is not one of my specialties. I've heard different spiritual masters able to do it over in Europe. Kind of like walk through walls, put themselves in other places, or they're in two places at the same time. So you can, and of course time's not real, so all you have to do, you know, to shape-shift time is really go into a deep state of brainwave state in meditation, or, you know, many times people experience that timelessness when they're making love to somebody because they're in the experience of being present, and that's all we really have is the present moment, you know. Time is a construct that we have because we have clocks. If you took away the clocks, we'd only have the sun, but everybody would have a different experience of time during the day. It's just that we have something to look at and have a construct with it. So, you know, shape-shifting is possible in any area. You know, it's not just just what I'm talking about here. It's just that you may have different techniques that you use to shape-shift. And it really comes down to, you know, the mind being in a place of stillness and being able to access spirits and their spirit. And there's many different ways of doing that. But that area in and of itself is not my specialty, you know, getting into bi-location and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes... And this is nothing about bilocation. I think I'm going back to what we were talking about before, about people asking, can you shapeshift into a jaguar or something? It shows, again, we focus so much on the physical, visual, like something I can touch in this material world, things and transformations that we don't see the whole... other, I guess, states of existence or that whole other part of the universe that is right there, that's so much, it's just as real. It's just that we're, you know, we don't, I guess, shift and see it all the time. People kind of, you know, they kind of, I guess, block it out because we do have to live in the material world. So, do you know what I'm asking?
I know exactly right. Well, first, it has to be cultivated.
Uh-huh.
And the reason it's cultivated is, if you think about, you know, somebody who's blind and gets their sight back or whatever, they're not used to that. It's not their baseline. So it has to be cultivated. So, you know, there's subtle energy. And, you know, when people go in and they first start meditation, you know, they hear all these stories about, you know, I'm going to see colors, I'm going to have this, I'm going to have that. And, you know, it's subtle energy. And there'll be subtle shifts. And if you stick with the practice long enough, that subtle energy turns into more significant shifting and changing. We all have gifts. We all have abilities to do things. But we have to put aside the time to be still and go within ourselves, and that subtle becomes more significant. And the thing about shape-shifting, you know, on that form, it gets back, you know, once again, I mean, if you look at the tribes and the shamans that do shape-shifting, you know, they are brought up from the very beginning experiencing that is true and that they are one with everything. See, the key is that, you know, the Shwa, when they look at an object, like when the Shwa shamans came up to New York City to go to Omega, they hugged the building because the building is Mother Earth to them. That means they believe the building is no more, no better, no worse than they are or another animal. everything is one. And if you experience, with an experience that is beyond belief, that everything is one, then you truly can start to shift your molecules into different objects. The key to the whole thing, though, is, see, we could go down to South America and we could sit around, you know, and experience a shaman shape-shifting. And if we have skepticism or cynicism in our belief system, we would see this person, you know, shifting into a jaguar, you know, on all fours, you know, squirming around like a human being. And everybody else there is experiencing that person as a jaguar.
Uh-huh.
It has to go through our filter. And that's why, you know, when most people are skeptical about things, they don't experience the same things as other people, you know, and we'll call it the placebo effect, but it doesn't mm-hmm. matter. You know, we create our own reality. It has to be cultivated with many of us over time. And because we've grown up in the Western world and been so focused on material and form, we have to unlearn that and realize mm-hmm. that that's a fraction. And I mean, it's the tip of an iceberg compared to everything else that we can't see and experience because of our own ignorance, basically.
Well, I think that when you're ready for that, I think that your guides or, you know, your higher self starts to show it to you in subtle ways, because like you said, it's a subtle energy, and calls your attention to it. And I just think, and I'm sure you'll see this to a degree, it's all about choices. You have to choose to do that for yourself. It's nothing that's going to be forced on you, or that's going to happen spontaneously. You're just going to be able to do this one day. It's kind of like you have to make choices, and you have to work, and you have to follow this path of, I guess, like self-discovery, and you have to put the time in. A lot of people don't want to, I guess, devote, what is it, like 5 or 10 minutes a day is the minimum you should do for meditation. They don't even want to do that because they're very busy with distractions. So, but then they don't understand why they don't experience the same things that I or other people do when we go to a location that has a high vibrational energy or that has a lot of spirit activity, or if we sit in a circle and do communication. They don't understand why they don't get the same results. And you try to tell them why, and I always think they're not ready yet. But, I mean, how would someone begin to get themselves ready for that if they thought that's what they wanted?
Well, you have to have a practice. And, you know, the practice is, you know, like in A Course in Miracles, everything is magic, okay? And the only thing that's real is spirit, or capital L, love. But magic is the way out. Like, you know, in A Course in Miracles, forgiveness is the way, forgiveness isn't real either, but it's the way out of the dream or the illusion. So we have to do whatever it is that we have to do to get ready. So we have to find what magic works for us. Some people's breath work, some people's meditation, some people's yoga, some people's Tai Chi, Qigong. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, you got to find what resonates with you and keep searching around until something, you know, puts you in a place of stillness or a place where you start to experience a different an internal feeling. And what I mean by feeling, I'm not talking about feelings of sadness and happiness. I'm talking about like a seventh sense, a feeling of a knowingness inside. And many times mm-hmm. people have to have things happen in their lives in order to see that. You were talking about, you know, you're not being forced to do certain things. Well, we all have contracts, basically. And so we're here to learn certain things as a part of that contract. And what may happen is you may get messages over and over and over again, and each time the message or the lesson gets a little bit more severe and a little bit more unsettling.
Right.
And that happens is because it's to get your attention. And the mm-hmm. same thing happened to me in this past year. I'm being led to expand and go out to Portland, Oregon, keep my place here in Philadelphia. But, you know, I've been getting this message to expand for years, you know, and each time the lesson comes again, there's more consequences associated with it. Now, you know, one might say, like, well, you got all this negative stuff happening. No. What's happening is, you know, for me, just to, for example, to be in the maximum potential of who I am as a spiritual being having a physical experience or human experience, is these things show up in my life so that because spirit wants me to experience my fullness, my wholeness. And
oh,
in
yeah.
order to do that, there's certain things that I'm supposed to do while I'm here. And, you know, sometimes my ego gets comfortable and wants to sit around and, like, continue to do what I'm doing. And spirit's like, no. Okay, so here's another one. So here's another lesson. And that's how people get ready. People get ready by, you know, pain is all pain is a barometer. You know, there's a psychological problem. Well, it's physiological, but it's in the psychology books. But basically, you know, people are born without pain, the ability to feel pain. And the average lifespan, and this is probably is incorrect, I'm just recalling it from my memory, is about 26 years old for somebody that is not able to feel pain because they get themselves in situations where they harm themselves. So pain is a barometer that we need to do something different.
Right.
And so if we feel pain enough, whatever it's psychological, mental, physical, whatever, we'll start to shift. And that's how a lot of people get ready. And, you know, it's just the way it is.
Oh, definitely. Now, you were talking earlier about this, and there was a question, and I don't want to let it go because it has to do with shape-shifting also. Kellek wants to know if shape-shifting is used anywhere in the West for healing. I know you mentioned it was in China in the East that it was used.
Yeah, it's used in the West, too. I'll give you an example. My former girlfriend from Pittsburgh, her father, you know, had cancer a number of years ago. And this is a very simple way that shape-shifting can be really useful. And what he did, he was so committed to his healing path, and he lived for 20-some years after this, after they said he was going to die.
Uh-huh.
And he visualized, you remember the computer game Pac-Man?
Yes.
Remember?
Yes.
Okay. Those little things that eat up other Pac-Men?
Yes.
He visualized a little Pac-Man inside his body for like a half hour in the morning, a half hour at noon, and a half hour at night, eating away at the cancer.
Uh-huh.
And his cancer disappeared. His cancer disappeared. That's shape-shifting. That's practicing shape-shifting, you know, through guided visualization. That will shape-shift if you really are committed to it. And, you know, we do practice it in the Western world. We practice it primarily, you know, in energy healers, those of us that are energy healers, those of us that are, you know, into, you know, there's all sorts of different energy ways of working with energy, but, you know, it may not be called shape shifting per se. You know, I've read so much, and basically you have like all these different things that are all kind of doing the same thing, but they're called different things depending on the culture that they come from. But they're all underlying truths. So shape-shifting could be a form of guided visualization. Or shape-shifting could, you know, the Course in Miracles is talking about shape-shifting, basically. Shape-shifting from fear to love.
It is. It is. It's very, it's a common theme. I think it just, whatever culture or belief system you're coming from probably has a different word for it, just like prayer, you know. Prayer, in a way, can be shape-shifting. Because
exactly.
I've seen that work, and I've seen creative visualization work. I've seen something similar to what you call shape shifting, where you visualize something disappearing. I've been able to cure headaches that way, myself. Only on myself. I haven't tried it on anyone else. So it's interesting. So and. Do you practice this?
How I practice it now, this brings up a really nice segue, is I practice it through the law of attraction. Because what I primarily am moving into, you know, with coaching on the phone with people is law of attraction work. We're shape-shifting in law of attraction. We're using different ways of, we're taking the vision statement. And basically what I do is I get people to form a vision statement on different and it, in all areas of their life, relationship, mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, you know, and take all those areas, create a vision statement, and then we do breath work. And breath work takes us into a theta brainwave state. And so the background music is the breathwork music. I go into a breathing for a half hour. Now, what I've done is I've also recorded on a tape my vision statement for a half hour, saying it over and over and over again. Of course, by the end of the half hour, I'm ready to, like, go through the ceiling because I'm so high from my vision statement. I get to listen to that over and over again every day. That goes in because I'm in a theta brainwave state. That bypasses the ego and pretty much it goes right into the unconscious mind. So I'm actively lying down in the morning, doing the breath work, listening to the tape, shape-shifting or reprogramming my mind and going into the unconscious because the unconscious is what's running everything anyway. And then after that, I sit in stillness in a meditation, and I might ask questions to spirit, you know, et cetera, or just sit in stillness. And that is an active way that I'm using shape-shifting in my life to create and manifest the things that are important for me that are in alignment with my purpose of why I'm here.
Wow. So if someone wants to, I guess, you know, book a session with you, or I'm not really sure what you call it, a session or a healing
session. Right.
An appointment, how would they do that?
The easiest way is to call me directly. You know, a lot of people, you know, send me an email or you can call me directly. My email is rusty@rustystewartphd.com. And my phone number is 609-332-4663. And that's my cell phone. So regardless of whether I'll be here probably until about September this year and then be moving to Portland, my studio will still be here. But I'll be doing coaching sessions with people over the phone, and that phone number will stay with me.
Okay. It's also on your website, which is personalgrowthalternatives.com, correct?
Exactly. www.personalgrowthalternatives.com.
Yeah, we have to say everything out loud because there is a lot of people that listen on iTunes to the podcast. I want them to get all the information because I think there's a couple people that are very interested in the work that you're doing and think that it could help them in their life. I know that I'm thinking, geez, this could help me in my life.
Here's one other thing that's probably, you know, I also have a new website that I'm working on right now. There's not a lot on it yet. And it's called lawofattractionexpert.com. Now, so what it is law of attraction, and in between each word is a hyphen.
Okay.
Okay, so law-of-attraction-expert.com.
Okay.
And that's going to be my coaching website where we do all this coaching and law of manifestation work, law of attraction.
Oh, wow. Yes, I've been able to, I know people are skeptical and we've gone into that a little bit, but I will swear and I will tell anybody who would ever want to ask me about it privately. I can't go into it on the air. It would be too long of a story. I've been able to manifest things in my life that at one point I would have thought were impossible. I've been able to manifest relationships, jobs, places to live, things that, you know, you think are unbelievable. I know we said we use it for spiritual things, but we do live in the material world. And I've been able to manifest spiritual things for myself beyond that. But you really can change like I know you said the laws of attraction. It's almost like you change your own magnetism in what you're attracting to yourself. And you're able to attract the things that you need to get to the next level and then the next level and then the next level. And you have to make that leap, though. That's why I said how to tell somebody to get ready, because you have to believe that you can do this. And accept that you can do it. Because if you don't, it doesn't work. I swear it doesn't. I don't know if you've had experience with that, but it just won't work if you don't think it's going to work.
It won't work if you don't think it's going to work. So, I mean, there's a lot of, like, I mean, I could tell you that, you know, I've been doing this work for 20 years. Well, that 20 years is all preparation for things that continue to evolve in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that's really important about all law of attraction work, which is really not talked about in the secret, you know, the secret was very incomplete and didn't give people enough information, is that you can't be attached to what you're manifesting. Because mm-hmm. the reality of it is, you know, we have to move forward, because if we don't move forward and take action, then we're not essentially being co-creators.
Right.
And, you know, if you look at the five elements, of course, you have, you know, you have fire, which is action. You have water, which is feeling. You have the earth, which is manifestation. The ether, which is spirit. And then air, which is thought. And you have to use all of those to manifest. But and have gratitude for whatever you manifest.
Oh, definitely.
You know, gratitude even for stuff that you would judge as bad. Because when we start, we can't have this be like, you know, well, I only manifested that, but I didn't manifest that. We manifest everything.
No.
We have to have gratitude for everything. And then mm-hmm. not be attached to what comes about. Because our egos, and I'm not saying ego is a bad thing, it's just that our ego doesn't know what's best for us.
It
so
doesn't.
We put it out there, and then after we put it out there, we're gracious for what comes back, because spirit knows the direction that we're to go in. And when we start getting better at this and attain a level of humility and gratefulness and grace, more and more starts to be manifest that's in alignment with who we are, because we start to shape shift who we are more in alignment with spirit.
Oh, definitely. I know that I think that not being attached to things, even relationships, important relationships that you would think are very important in your life, learning not to be attached to those was a very difficult lesson for me, and I still am working on it. I mean, I always say we're always working, we're always in progress, we're always getting more evolved, I guess, should we say. But that was one of, I guess, maybe because I'm a Taurus, so I'm very Earth. I always think that's why I have a difficult time letting go of things. But letting, you know, being able to let go of those things I manifested or not need them or be attached to them was very difficult. I think that was one of the most difficult things that I went through. And it was an extremely painful lesson. You know, I basically lost everything that I had, literally, and was completely alone. So... Okay. it was the lowest point of my life. And from then on, I learned not to, you know what, I said, you know what, this is a lesson for me. I have to look for the lesson. And I looked, and I remember laying in my bed thinking, please, I is this the lesson? Like, do I have it right? And I did, and I said, you know, I can't hold on to these things because I don't need them. I'm still here. I didn't die. I didn't disintegrate. I'm still here. So, yeah, but I always want to tell other people, I don't want them to have to hit that low point, you know?
Other people's lessons are their lessons. They have their contract. You know, I mean, even in therapy, I do not, you know, I allow people to do what they're going to do, you know, because that's how they learn. You know, I give you a quick analogy. You know, somebody can come into my office and be banging their head on the wall on one side of the room. And I can be like, oh, I know what you should do. I'm an expert at this. I have a PhD. Oh, here you go. Why don't you go over to the other wall over here? And they start banging their head against that wall. Now, meanwhile, they might bang their head against that new wall that I sent them over to 100 more times. They came into my office. Now, the door is on the other side of the room. That's what we're trying to get to, transcendence and, you know, moving away from that mm-hmm. into something more aligned with love. Meanwhile, over on the wall that it came in on, they may only bang their head 5 more times if I can just witness their transformation and get out of the way.
Right.
And that's what we have to do with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We have to get out of our own way. And you know, when you talked about, you know, losing everything, that's the way 2009 was for me. And I, you know, I went through a lot of pain, but I look back on it as a huge opening, because the things that I want and I'm here to do and my purpose and what I'm here to do in my life, I got to clear out the old to make way for the new. And if I'm not clearing it out, Spirit's like, you know, like, well, I'll do it for you. Here we go.
It's very difficult to allow people that you love and that you care about hit that point. And that was a very hard thing for me to do also. But I did.
It is hard. It is hard.
Oh, and I mean, and I love, I would say, you know, I don't know everyone in the world, but loving everyone is also an important lesson that I had to learn. And I, like I said, most of the work I do is with grounded spirits, which is, I say it's a person without a body, and their interactions with usually a physical person. And it's just, you know, again, letting them hit that low point and really loving them, even though a lot of the things that you learn about that spirit and as they, you know, they share where they're stuck with you and you try to, you know, assist them and finding their way out, usually just by loving them. Like you said, like you just witness whatever it is. I just, you know, I got to a point where, you know, you don't judge. You have no judgment towards them. All you see is a person, is a human being that is in a great amount of pain because they can't let go of something. And you kind of just say, you know what? I love you the way that you are. And so many times that releases a lot of whatever their problem is. I don't know if you understand exactly what I'm talking about with things, but you just accept someone. I kind of say, like, you kind of give them a hug, even though they don't have a body. If it's a physical person, you kind of give them a hug. So I like your hug therapy thing. You just love them the way that they are. That goes so far in helping them accept that part of themselves and being able to let go of it.
Yeah, well, that's like nobody wants to be fixed. Even
right.
People that come here into my office don't want to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where I have different boundaries than other therapists. You know, I'm doing work. I'll be doing work in this lifetime, next lifetime. You know, it's continuous. So, you know, people want to know, be accepted for who they are, know they're okay, and know that other people experience the same types of things.
Mm-hmm.
And that acceptance allows us then to, you know, Carl Jung would say, you know, is to embrace the shadow side of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, light and darkness, you know, essentially in duality are the same thing. And, you know, if we can bring love to the darkness, you know, eventually that allows us to transcend and make huge shifts in our lives. You know, and everybody's got a different path, but there's certain paths that believe that, you know, transcendence happens through purity. And then there's other paths that say, no, transcendence happens through moderation. And other paths, you know, there's, you know, some severe, you know, drugs and alcohol and transcendence happens that way. So there's many different ways to transcend, and you have to find what works for you.
Oh, yes. It's definitely a personal, very personal journey and personal, I guess, you know, you'll find your own answers. And what works, like, even when you and I will talk, like we are now, about different examples of things that worked, that might not work for someone who's listening. You know, you do have to find your own path. But it's nice to know that there are people and traditions, I guess, not really a tradition, I guess, ways of being that do accept for who you are without judging or, you know, because to me, everyone is at a different point in their journey. And to someone who's farther along, I guess, or more transcended than I am, I guess I look like, you know, a bug. but then, like, to where I am, I could look back at other people and say, oh, yeah, I was there, and, you know, that's, you should get over that or whatever, you know. It's, you get to certain points and you learn not to judge that. Every point, I guess what I'm trying to say is every point in the development is equally valuable. And someone who's farther along isn't a better person than someone who's just starting out. You start to see that. Actually, I think that I couldn't even pick where I'd want to be, because when I look at other things that I went through, even when I lost everything, that was the most profound experience I had in my life. I felt things more then than I've felt ever since, that I was so in touch with myself after that.
Anything that involves severe pain and tragedy really opens the heart wide open. You know, and you think about times in our lives when, you know, we've lost a loved one, you know, mm-hmm. or we're faced with a serious health problem or whatever. You know, that's where humility comes in. Our mortality becomes real. Our attachments, we realize how attached we've been to certain things. And that grieving process allows our hearts to burst wide open. And so the key is, how do I keep my heart open after I finish grieving this? Because that's where the power is. Power is mm-hmm. in our heart. And that's mm-hmm. why when we go through and we have these what we can call bottoms in the addictions field, you know, these bottoms open our hearts to the fact that, like, oh, I don't know it all. It's not working. You know, and you know, the first step in the 12 steps, and I'm not like a huge 12 step proponent, but, you know, there's a lot of good stuff in it. I mean, because I believe in integration, so I believe there's no one answer. There's a lot of different right. things that people have to do. But it's turning your will over to God, basically, and giving up control. I don't have control over this. And by right. giving up control, you gain control, because the humility is like, you know, you're a co-creator. You're not the creator. You're a co-creator.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to explain to other people. I always tell them you just have to experience it, in that by letting go of that need for control, you gain so much more power and control. Not even control. It's more like a power of being able to, like we were saying, manifest things for yourself and right. know where you should be and why you should be there and which way you should go next. And I think that a lot of people that I deal with especially are working through fear, which was another big thing for me. And that an important message that's come through a lot is that any decision that you make that's based on fear is going to cause immense problems and probably bring you maybe to that place faster. But is that really the direction you want to go in? I usually say if you're fearful, like I know in myself, of something, or I'm repelled by something, like I guess I don't like something, I always think that's something I really need to look at. Because there's something there that, for whatever reason, I'm not wanting to deal with. And for me personally, that's always an indicator of, oh, this is another step I'm going to have to take. I just want to stay, like you said, comfortable where I am now.
Right, right.
So when fear comes in, or when that, you know, I don't like that thing comes in, you're like, you know, why? I always think you should examine why you have that fear. Why don't I like that? Why am I afraid to let go of this thing? You know, what's going to happen if I don't have that anymore? A couple more things. I can't believe I talked for almost an hour. But a big thing in the paranormal world, and I don't know if you can see if you can identify with this or not. A lot of people that deal with ghosts in the paranormal, I'm not a big gadget freak. There are a lot of people that are. They get so, I don't know, focused on that thing that they're holding in their hand that's supposed to give them some kind of reading or message, even if it's a camera or a recorder, that they're afraid to let go of that and experience what it really is and see for what it really is. And I think if we could get past that point of those things and looking for, I guess, some kind of material evidence of the spiritual world, if they could just get back past that point, we would actually see it for what it is. And I see a lot, and it's hard to explain to people that can't see it. Do you understand what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do, and I have mixed feelings on that, because I think that, you know, I think that a lot of the work that I'm doing is about creating bridges for people.
Mm-hmm.
And the gadgets are a bridge, And we're becoming more sophisticated with them. You know, the digital cameras pick up orbs.
Right.
I mean, just pick orbs up right away. So we know the stuff's there. But it helps other people to open their minds who were closed-minded before because they're still coming from, you know, they have to see it to believe it. So at least that opens people's minds, then start a process that, where they may be able to let go of that and be
right.
Like, oh, wow, I've experienced this. I'll give you a quick story. You know, Lewis Melman's Ronan was one of my first teachers in shamanism. He's a medical doctor, a PhD. He's half white man, quarter Lakota, quarter Cherokee medicine man. And we were doing this. There was this place called Rising Moon Center for the Healing Arts above Skipback, Pennsylvania here, no longer there. And we're doing it literally like a type of exorcism for some people in the barn. And uh-huh. We're all in the barn. Everything's shut, completely shut. There's no doors open, no windows, no nothing. And he's calling in spirits. And all of a sudden, this wind comes out of nowhere and starts blowing inside the barn.
Uh-huh.
And I got this chill up my spine. I could feel it go around my neck and kind of swirl. And I knew in that moment that that was spirit.
Uh-huh.
That was spirit, and that's the way that spirit's described. You get that cold, chilled feeling.
Right.
I didn't need any type of, you know, that was my experience.
Exactly. I always tell people, you know, when we're in that situation, and I tell the people I work with, I didn't need that EMF meter or that digital camera or that thermometer to tell me what I experienced. I know what I experienced, and I don't look for validation, I guess, from that, because to me, I trust myself and my own feelings and my own perceptions enough that if I experienced it, it was real. And that's how I deal with clients. When they tell me they experienced something, whether that's my perception or not, that was their experience. And to them, that really happened the way they say it happened, because that was what was real to them at that
right.
moment. And no, unless you were right there in their body with them, you can't say whether it happened or not. You know, and that's another reason why I said, like, these, I know they open people up, like you said, the digital cameras and everything, to being open to the world, but I think it all, that people get dependent on that, and they see it more as the end and not the means to the spirit world.
Yeah, I can see, you know, I guess it gets back to the whole thing again, where people have to have, you know, they have to find what works for them, and there's
mm-hmm.
different stuff out there. That, you know, I myself don't need validation for certain things, but coming from the academic world, I realize it's useful for some people who absolutely will not entertain it unless they can see something.
This is true.
It does help shift, but people like us don't need that. So I want to be careful not to judge it.
Right.
Because the thing is like, you know, Ken Wilber is like a big, he's Buddhist, he's a big proponent on research in, you know, in transpersonal psychology. And the reason he is because he realizes that we have to be able to somehow show the scientific world that this stuff is real, because it'll speed up the process.
It will. I think it will, but it's going to be like as painful as giving birth to something. To keep them over that, I guess, hump that is there. That's why I always picture it. Like it's going to be painful for a lot of them, so I think, to let go of that whole thing. And I hope it happens in my lifetime, because I think it would be a beautiful thing to see that transformation occur.
Yeah, well, I think we're very fortunate. We're living in exciting times, because we're probably going to see more change happen in our lifetime than any other generation up to this point, I would think.
Oh, yes. I think we already have. So, and I'm being warned that we're done. They're like, hurry up, hurry up. I could talk for another hour, Rusty. I swear I could. But I'm going to, I guess, say goodbye, even though I don't want to. I could talk about this all night. And again, can you just say one more time how people can get in touch with you?
Yeah, there's my phone number, my cell phone number, which you're more than welcome to call on, 609-332-4663. And my website is www.personalgrowthalternatives.com. You can also find me on www.rustystewartphd.com and www.law-of-attraction-expert.com.
Great. Oh, Rusty, I'm so happy that you're here with us tonight. I know I learned a lot. I think I might have shifted a little bit, too. So, I'm serious. I, you know, every time I talk to someone in this field, it shifts a little bit. So I want to thank you for that. And have a great night and stay in so you don't slip on the roads, okay?
Yeah, we got an inch out there now.
Oh, boy.
It's heavily right now.
All right, well, have a great night, Rusty. I'll talk to you again soon.
You too,
sure.
Lori.
All right, bye-bye.
Sure, bye-bye.
All right, thanks everyone for being here, especially Kurt, Ron, and Lori, and Kalec. I love you guys, and I will see you again next week.
The ghosts are active. The ethers are alive with paranormal energy, and the spirits are calling to you. One of New Jersey's most documented haunted estates is summoning you to a ghost hunter weekend at Elaine's Victorian Inn in historic Cape May, America's oldest seaside resort. You'll experience one-on-one spiritual readings, guided tours with the latest technology, a walking tour of Cape May's most hallowed haunts, and ghosts aplenty. But not to worry. Your chambers await you at one of Cape May's most elegant abodes. The food is world class and will even treat you to a full-length mystery musical comedy that's to die for. Space is limited, so make your reservation now. Here's our ghostly host with more details.
Hi, I'm Lori Hull, a psychic medium, paranormal investigator, and co-author of Cape May Haunts. I will be at Elaine's Haunted Mansion's Ghost Hunter Weekend to provide psychic readings and lead the paranormal investigations. I can't wait to see you all there. Please visit my website, tricountyprs.com, to find out more.
The Chat People Radio would like to thank our audio engineer and producer, Bill Horton, voiceover announcer, Steve Shockley, your host, Lori Hull. We want to thank you for listening to the Chat People Radio. We always welcome your suggestions and comments. You can find us at www.thechatpeopleradio.com. Until next time, keep it paranormal. The opinions expressed on the Chat People Radio are the views of the show's host and guests.